schaffen Rückschritt. Auch wir haben Sorgen und Fußball. Chip. Oh, Mr. Oliveira, what a cheeky goal.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the 423 Soccer Pod, the podcast that CFC built. This is Jim, aka Chattagooner.
Hi everybody, this is Shabby.
Hey everyone, this is Shelly. Shelly Ayers 82.
Hey, and this is Great Footballer, aka Todd. Or maybe I'm Todd, aka Great Footballer. Either way, I haven't had a lot of sleep, but I'm here.
Yeah, he's here. So he's back. He's back. We missed him last week. But this week he is back and talking CFC and other soccer musings for this week. So we don't have a whole lot of stuff to talk about CFC wise. Why don't we start outside of CFC and go to you guys wanted to talk a little bit about the women's national team. There was some big news out of the women's national team and from U.S. soccer. And I'm not talking about the perfect own goal hat trick that was scored.
For the women's team.
Yeah.
Oh, that poor player.
The poor player.
It's just embarrassing.
I know. I feel so bad for her.
Hilarious. She plays for Liverpool. So I only wish the worst for her, but not only did she score three own goals, but she scored one with her left foot, one with her right foot, and one with her head. And I don't know if that has ever happened before. I can't imagine.
It's impressive.
It really is impressive.
And she did it all in like the first 22 minutes.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
It's truly a week of firsts.
Absolutely amazing.
It really will be like something to go back and look at is number one, the perfect own goal, right, left, header. But then also, you know, if somebody ever manages that again, then we'll look at how quickly it was done. And if you had a regular hat trick in that amount of time, it would really be impressive.
Yes.
Things you want to go down in history for.
Exactly. I mean,
there is no way. I mean, I'm just going to go out. I don't think this is much of a limb. There's no way there's been a perfect own goal hat trick in less than a half before. I mean, that is just, anyway, I loved it. Now people online were like, oh, don't, you shouldn't, you know, you need to support her. I'm like, no, I don't support New Zealand. I don't support Liverpool, and anybody scores a hat trick, own goal, a hat trick of own goals for a team that I support, I am going to laugh at. I'm sorry. You
know, I'm a terrible person. Well, you know what? Such a momentous feat should be celebrated because, again, when is this ever going to happen again?
I'll tell you what. If John Terry did that in a game against Arsenal, I would watch that stuff over and over and over and over and over again for the rest of my life. So
you're not wrong.
So, I mean, it's awesome. I mean, I do feel for her, and I'm glad the Liverpool supporters came out, and I'm glad the New Zealand supporters came out and supported her and her teammates. That's fine. I don't have to do that. I loved every second of it. It was hilarious. But
I just can't even imagine what that locker room was like, though.
Oh, well, yeah.
How are you explaining yours? How do you explain your, I mean, things happen. Don't get me wrong. On goals happen. It happens.
Yes. One own goal happens.
Yeah, I mean, one own goal. How in the world do you explain not only three, but three in the first half?
Yeah, it was a lot to watch. But we had some more news. Who wants to open up? Who wants to talk about the news that came out of U.S. soccer?
Well, you know, the women's national soccer team did reach a proposed settlement in their class action lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation for equal pay. And that sounds really exciting, you know, that they said that, you know, contingent on negotiating a new CBA, they'll, you know, get what they ask for. But I think that that's kind of loaded. And I think we can kind of talk about how this is a win that maybe isn't a win.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't read in between the lines. I just read it for what it was. And then, you know, Hope Solo's tweet thread today, I was like, oh, if you kind of read this more closely,
not as great as it sounds.
How much of a win is it? Now, I guess we'll have to wait and see after the CBA is negotiated. And of course, the big kind of elephant in the room is the FIFA money, which, you know, U.S. soccer can't do a whole lot about by themselves. So I don't know, but how are y'all feeling? Todd, how are you feeling about this?
I think at face value, it appears to be a really good thing, and the devil's in the details, and we'll see how this is handled. And two, we can look at it as a win under the current administration. You know, it's a lawsuit, yeah, but look at who may be coming back into the fold for U.S. soccer. I mean, you're talking about Carlos Cordero, who already has a dreadful record with the U.S. women. So I think that right there throws into question like how this could be handled and how it will be implemented. Mm-hmm. So I think there's still a lot of questions on the surface. I mean, legally, it's a win.
Yeah, I just want to see the money actually happen. But I will say, if you haven't read any of the information that came out since it, don't, if you were easily offended, because there were some pretty sad comments.
Some of the comments?
The comments, yeah. Oh, God, read about it. Just don't read the comments, because, no. You know, I'm pretty level-headed. I got about 10 comments deep, and even my blood was boiling. Because the thing is that it's just bad. It's just people just being ignorant. You know, a lot of
self-care is
going
not
on.
Reading the comments.
No, exactly. 100%. 100%.
Yeah, especially so. I first saw it on an ESPN FC tweet, and I'm like, okay, anything from a main ESPN account, the comments are just going to be a hot mess. And they were beyond a hot mess. I mean, the first comment I read, okay, Todd, I'm just going to guess. What do you think the first guy brought up about the women's national team in response to that article?
FC Dallas Youth beat them 5-0, and they were a bunch of under 15s.
Exactly. That was the first thing mentioned. I mean, that's always the first thing. And I'm just really tired of hearing that. So,
I think, when that happened, Weston McKinney was probably on that under 15 side too. He's pretty good.
Stacked with talent.
So anyway, I think overall it's got to be seen as a positive, but I don't know who said it. The truth is in the details. So
I want to say this is what I want to say about why I think it's, and I heard Stephen A. Smith, which is when you're doing something so bad that Stephen A. Smith, who knows nothing about soccer, cares to comment on it. About how bad it is that it's that this is even a thing, that they're not getting paid equally to this point. And this is kind of where I fall on this. Since they represent the national team, and these are not like, you know, private, you know, clubs and that sort of thing, then it's kind of like the Olympics. You know, if you get a gold medal in bobsled, you get the same as if you got a gold medal in some other sport, you know, biathlon or whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. And that's kind of how I feel about the national sides. Like, if you play for the national side, this is what you get paid, regardless of if it's the men's or the women's squad. I don't even understand like why it was that difficult of a thing to, your base salary should be the same. And then you can't control FIFA. So that, I mean, that is what it is. But from a national team perspective, I just really don't understand. And I will say it is a bit more complicated because of how interwound the women's national team was with, say, you know, their salaries were getting supplemented when they were coming back to play professionally what was the original iteration of the women's professional league here?
I don't remember.
Hold on.
But their salaries were interwound and they were supplemented so that those clubs could afford to keep them here and play. So it was a bit more complicated, but on the surface, really, they should just get the same base salaries.
Right. And so them saying, yes, we're going to move forward together and equalize the pay so that it's the same. And, you know, you're going to get to share across amongst yourselves $24 million in back pay for what it should have been. Like, this is nice, but there's still a part of me that is so resentful that it had to get to this through litigation.
Right.
Like, it's almost condescending at this point, going, well, okay, fine, since you finally sued us, pat on the head, little lady, we'll go ahead and we'll be equal now.
Exactly. Like,
it makes me want to swallow all of this ugliness and hard feelings, and because it really feels disingenuous. It doesn't feel like, yeah, we're really trying to work toward this together. It feels more like, okay, little lady, you caught us. Now, if you could figure out how to collectively bargain a good agreement, we'll be fair.
Yeah, they spent $9 million to get to this point to agree to pay $24 million.
That's really sad that it had to go that far. And also, you were asking about the first league. It was the Women's United Soccer Association. That was the first iteration.
Was from 2001 to 2003. And then Women's Professional Soccer was from 2007 to 2012.
Yep. But yeah, I'm with you, Shabby, too, though. Yeah, I said it's just it's too little too late, in my opinion. I'm glad we'll see what happens with it. But I really feel like it's just a cop-out at this point. It doesn't feel like they really want to try to make things equal at that point. I guess too, at some point you have to think as well, like what Todd was saying, if you're playing for the same league, you should be the same tier of league. You're playing for the men, like the women's and men's national team. It just seems common sense that you would be paid the same across it. But honestly, on the flip side of that too, if your side has a better track record, shouldn't you be the ones being paid more? I mean, let's just think about it that way.
And it's taken us 6 years of litigation to get here, too. Mm-hmm. Like,
exactly.
At some point, you almost want to go, like, is it too little, too late? Like,
yeah, then we just need to stop now. Like, you agreed, but whatever. I mean, and because some of these players, too, they aren't even playing anymore. You've got all these players that it would have impacted or retired.
Now. Oh,
yeah. It's just infuriating. Yeah. It really is.
Well, I guess it'll be something to watch. I will admit I don't watch the men's team that much anymore. And
no, they're a joke.
And
no, I will say that loud and proud here. I love the U.S. women's national team, but I honestly don't care about the men's national team right now because their level of play is shameful.
Well, I mean, for CONCACAF, they're okay.
I will say, and again, I'm a little biased, but we are doing marginally and significantly better in qualifiers than we have in many a past year. I'll give us that. We are doing better on that end, but I think with that too, being a follower of both our men's and our women's national teams, the proof of that's going to be at getting to the World Cup. And how we do there, you know, because getting there is one thing. Performing once you're there is a whole nother thing, you know, ups and downs.
I want the men's national team to prove me wrong. I would really like to no longer be ashamed of them.
I don't know that I don't care that much either way. I've been to see them a couple times, but I hope they qualify. And I don't even know, to be honest, if I can bring myself to watch the next World Cup, considering where it is and all the stuff that's gone on.
You'd also be watching some 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. games. The time difference makes it a little bit hard to watch some of.
So on to dealings a little more close to home. We did have some CFC news this week. We had a couple of new signings. One is I think, very interesting. And I caught wind that he was in town a little bit earlier this month from a Detroit City fan who said, "Hey, I've heard that this player is down." Luna just
down
stole.
Sale.
I'm sorry, Luna just stole something from the office. I'm not really sure what she just took, but anyway,
I'd go seek time.
Yeah, so I think I don't know what it was. Maybe hopefully it was just a paper bag, but. So I heard that from a Detroit City follower that he was here, and that we just announced Roddy Green, who is a former Detroit City forward / midfielder. He has
a really good story.
I mean, a really good story. He started in the stands as a supporter and then made it on the team. And I remember he scored he scored a goal against, was it LA? I can't remember, but I know that it was a big deal to everybody at the club. You know, he's been with the team for a little while, you know, practicing, training, and has looked really good and has earned a deal. And so he's the first signing. And then the second signing is a kid from a Division I program, Greg Stratton, and he is mm-hmm. from somewhere in Missouri. I'm trying to look this up. Missouri State. And looks to be a defender. He's tall, 6'2", and probably looks like he plays.
He looks the part.
Yeah, he looks
the part. Well, they have him on the roster as a defender, just like they have Roddy on the roster as a forward, which means we actually have three forwards now on the roster, guys. Oh, my God.
It's like they've been listening to what we wanted.
we do, but we still don't have – it's going to be interesting to see. I don't know how we play, and I don't know how we're going to play, but we still do not have – like the target guy up front, like the number nine, we don't really have that person. So it's going to be interesting to see. We may not need that person. We may not play that way, but so it looks like we've got a lot of outside guys.
Well, based on the way Rod played at Stumptown, you know, he didn't play with a true number nine, and that maybe it may not have been because he didn't want one. It may have been because he didn't get
one. He didn't have one either. Yeah. But the thing is, again, keep in mind, there could be one out there that we're going to sign because we have a whole slew of these provisional people that are, you know, trainees going at it. So, right.
Yeah. So that brings us up to six. Is that 16 players? Is that correct? Let me see. Is that 16? So we've got two keepers, six defenders, six midfielders, three forwards. 6 + 6 = 12 + 5 = 17. So, that's what you just said, Shabby.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah, math is hard. I want to know if we're going to have a third goalie announced anytime soon. I'm just curious myself because, I mean, again, we haven't seen any of these of them play yet. We saw a little bit before we can see that, but I want to know if we're going to have another goalie in our mix or who is winning in the goalie off.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to watch. Yeah. Yeah. I mean some of the pictures that have come out from training, you see three keepers in the picture, but one of them is Michael. And I think he's going to school somewhere. So I don't think he'll be here. We've got the team is starting to flesh out a little bit. The center back, I think position seems to be pretty good. We may have a right back, out of those players. I don't know. We're going back to the Spinal Tap drummer. I don't know if we have the CFC left back. I don't see a left back here really, but so hopefully we'll find one soon. We've had a chance to play a couple of games. We played against a team from Nashville. And then we played against Memphis, which is interesting considering
they'll be our first Open Cup.
So Todd, I know that you talked a little bit with some folks with the club about the first friendly. What did you hear about that result?
First and foremost, the most important thing I heard were no injuries, which is something I think we can all celebrate.
That's a miracle. That's a miracle. Given
nothing worse than getting, that's a miracle. Nothing worse than getting started right off the bat with an injury. So, So the first one was against, Bremen United out of Nashville?
Bremen United. I think that's how it's pronounced.
It was an amateur side. Yeah, it was an amateur side. But, you know, I think from what I understood, you know, the coaches, number one, I think I can say the score was, I think it was 4-0, 4-1, something along those lines. But the more important thing was that CFC, you know, we put the ball in the back of the net, which I've always thought was like a really important thing. No matter who you're playing against, you know, just right off the bat, get some goals. And so where it doesn't seem like a foreign concept and that pressure doesn't, you know, continually build up. And like I said, I think from what they said, they were impressed. They ran in three groups. And each group, you know, the first group, you know, was kind of like, I guess, the first team run out and then second and third. So I think the team learned a lot about those players while they were out there. But I think they were satisfied definitely with the first game.
Yeah, I think I don't know who scored other than I heard Roddy scored a goal in the friendly, so that was that would be good. So I don't know if it was 4 or 5 nothing, but it was. I don't believe we gave up a goal. And from what I heard, the keepers didn't have a whole lot of work to do, so that may not be the best thing for them. But
they got some stretching in.
Yeah, like Todd said, it's good to get those scoring boots on. And then we played Memphis yesterday, and I believe Jeremy said that it was a loss. It was a 2-1 loss. I don't know the format. I don't know if it was just a straight 90 minutes or if it was, you know, something more akin to what we did in the first one where we kind of rotated squads out. But in, you know, a 2-1 loss to a championship side,
that's pretty good.
That's not going to be, I mean, you know, that's not what they wanted. You know, they got to see some of the players that they might see next month. So that's a positive. So I reached out to the 901 soccer pod to see if they were able to sneak in or had any insight. And they, you know, they didn't see the game, so they didn't really know, have anything to say about it. So don't really have any insight, yeah. But you know, it's a 2-1 loss. Not a terrible result.
Really. I did find out that both of the goals that we gave up were penalties, which I don't know how to really look at that. I mean, from one perspective, I think, you know, giving up a penalty is usually a correctable thing for the most part. I mean, there's your freak things like, you know, a handball or something, but for the most part, those are correctable, manageable things. Now, was it because they camped out in our 18 and, you know, we were just under so much pressure? I don't know, but generally speaking, I don't guess I'm too upset about that.
If it's two penalties, I'm just going to say that it was the ref's fault that we were robbed of the match and that they weren't actually penalties and they missed two penalties on us. So the game should have been 3-2 CFC. So that's what I'm.
Their refs were paid off. They're out yes. to get us.
Right. They're out to get us.
Hey, at least they were paid.
We can only assume, Todd. We can only assume.
Oh, that's a riot. Well, so, yeah, I mean, the thing is, obviously we want to win, but honestly, I'll take 2-1 over, you know, getting beat 5-0. Yeah. I mean, I'll give it that. And again, I'm standing by my theory as to the format of these friendlies we're doing leading up to the season. I hope that it gives them kind of some time to get their sea legs. But I'm hoping that this makes us better prepared when we actually play them when it matters. Not that a friendly doesn't matter, but we have seen them. So you've got some of those jitters shaked off, or shook off rather. You can shake it off. We've seen kind of how they play. I know they weren't streaming it, but hopefully we're videoing it or something, some format. We can go back and visit it and kind of see where our deficiencies were. So, I mean, I like it. I'm just going to stay optimistic for that because trust me, 2-1 is better than what I was thinking it was going to be. I mean, not that our team is bad, but, you know,
as long as you come away with no injuries.
Yeah.
I think as long as you come away with no injuries and then there is, and then you're able to make some roster decisions based on what you saw, some positional decisions, then I say it's got to be a success. Even if you did, you know, lose, that's not what these games are about anyway. So
no, they're not. Mm-hmm. So now we have a couple of weeks to train and figure some things out. We've got two games under our belt, and you know the coaches have seen the players in a number of situations, and then we have come back with the Birmingham Legion on the 6th, and then the one game that right now we know is open to fans. In Greenville on the 12th, and then there's an outside chance that we might have a very outside chance that we might have an opportunity to see the team play on the 19th. So we'll see what that's, if things can get worked out, that would be awesome, but no guarantees there. So against Reinhardt University.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very next week we have those Maryland Bobcats in town. So
That was exciting.
It'll be here before you know it.
Yep. I mean, Tuesday starts March, and then it really is going to fly by at that point.
The other thing that's going to come up, I don't know if we have anything really, really formal or any new news, but can you all tell us anything about the women's team?
Well, we've had some hopefully final interviews. I mean, that's not any kind of weirdness. I mean, that's not giving up anything. So hopefully in the next week or so, I'm hoping that means we will have that announcement. Because as we talked about last week, the very first thing went out by the club saying, if you are a woman who wants to try out, here's the link. Please sign up on it so we can keep you up to date. And obviously you can't have tryouts without the coach. So, and we know that they said tryouts would probably be sometime late February, which we're already past that, or early March. So, you know, if they're going to end up using Finley, hopefully to do that, they're going to have to work it in between our season starting and all of that. So, and our practices that we normally have. I'm optimistic that in the next two-ish weeks, we'll have that. And we know that they are getting the schedule to that almost final point. And the advisory board has had a little bit of a preview, but that would be something that we think you'll be really excited when you see it, when you see the actual finalized thing, if it stays kind of how it is. So,
yeah, they're absolutely making. We're approaching a time where you're about to get a lot of news, and it's going to start hitting really fast back-to-back announcements about the women's team. We're going to see the coaching and technical staff. We're going to start seeing players, hopefully I'm hoping for open tryouts, you know, since we've done it for the men, why wouldn't we do that with the women?
Exactly.
We're going to see announcements about schedules. We're going to see announcements about kits. Like, all of this stuff is coming very soon. So,
all of the other big things. I know that because all the stuff that's coming up now, like the really big stuff, the things that your dreams are made of, what you wanted to see. Because it's not that it didn't seem real before we had the women's announcement and the big event of the Moxie, but whenever you start announcing technical staff and tryouts and, hey, here's your schedule, that it's real. I mean, for those that are still thinking in the back of their head, I don't think this is going to happen. It gets really real at that point.
Well, I know a lot of people are eager to see that schedule. That's going to be huge.
Yes, especially and how it's going
to fit into the schedule. I would love to know, like, how many slots there might be for the women's open tryouts. I know, you know, I forget how many we had for the men, but I got to think, you know, since this is going to be on the amateur level played over the summer, you know, every woman that's in college, you know, locally, and you think about some of the programs that we have, like within a stone's throw of Chattanooga, you know, going as far south as Barry, you know, down in Georgia, Lee, Covenant, Tennessee Wesleyan, Bryan, you know, there's just a lot they may want to be hanging around locally over the summer. And, you know, those schools in this area provided for the men's program for years. So I'm really excited to see what kind of talent can be generated from these local schools. And that's not to even, you know, rule out, you know, some of the local high school talent, you know, within 50-mile radius that might be some talent pop up from there too. So I'm just really excited to see that.
Well, that's what I was thinking too. So you've got, I mean, we know the local collegiate level, but if you think about it, we've got really, I mean, not just our strong academy side from CFC, but Dalton, Northwest Georgia, we've got great talent. Cleveland has it. And then you have to keep in mind, because this is MP or basically MPSL, or you're the women's side of it, is that you can have high school players from the academy play. There's nothing that says you can't. So that's kind of exciting too. We could have some younger talent. And I think that makes it really exciting to me, because those are local pools of people that aren't going to have to come from, you know, because we've had players from Hawaii before. I mean, we've had them from all over the place. And I guess theoretically we could have international people too. You never know, because we had many before. International and we've had them for both our women's side and our men's side. And we were playing
McKenna Davis. That's who was from Hawaii, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
McKenna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and the thing is that I know, and not to say it couldn't happen, I know we have a lot of folks who really want to see some of our past CFC women's players, but again, got to keep realistic. A lot of those ladies are either playing pro or they are past them wanting, you know, they just aren't playing anymore because they've started on with their professional lives, starting families. Not that you can't have a kid and play in the league, but a lot of those that we are normally used to seeing are past that point now. So hopefully, I mean, we could see some familiar faces, but I also don't want people to be disheartened if they didn't, like thinking that it was something like, oh, well, not because of lack of trust, you know, just we got to be realistic too.
Yeah. So keeping that in mind. Fair call out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't expect to have like 15 players that used to play for us, but one or two wouldn't hurt. So
yeah, and it could very well happen depending on if you think of all of the women's players we had over the year, a lot of which still live in this area.
Yeah,
it could happen. It's very very possible.
The only other thing I guess we have to, unless there's something else on the women's side. Or is club news that you want to talk about? The only other thing I have on our list right now is I'm interested in hearing y'all's reaction to the protagonist story that came out about Nisa and the international amateurs that seem to be populating the league or will be this year. any reactions from anybody?
Well, I mean, I'm glad the article came out because it's something that several of us knew that was going on last season. Yeah, I mean, and thing is, and again, several of them were Detroit players that tweeted, and then those tweets got deleted, but there are copies of those tweets. So, I mean, it doesn't shock me. I was shocked that we were the only team that voted against having international amateurs for the season. I mean, it doesn't fully shock me. I figured there would probably be at least one more.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think so, because even according to the protagonist article, it said that notion carried with three clubs voting against it.
That was last year.
Yeah, this year it was only us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I figured we would at least have one other one. But then again, that also could have been, not to pour salt in the wound, you know, the other two votes last year could have been Chicago and New Amsterdam.
Oh, bless.
I'm not saying that's the case.
So I'll come in with this take. Let me be devil's advocate for a second. We saw, like, in going all the way back to MPSL Pro, which our first MPSL Pro, hell yeah, brother. you know, we saw like how many internationals we had on that. And then we went to MPSL. Then we went to NISA and we saw real quick how difficult it was to get those P1 visas. So I think what has happened, like I said, I'm just being devil's advocate here, is they saw how difficult it was going to be. And I say they, meaning clubs across the board, to fill an entire roster with a limit of seven internationals that you probably couldn't get P1 visas for. So how are you going to get around this? And so I feel like it was just a necessary evil. Now, I don't know how much, if it is really something that we need to be concerned about from a legal perspective, or if it's not. I feel I can kind of go either way on this. I think it would be really brazen for these clubs just to go signing these players to these contracts, and there would be legit legal ramifications that are likely to, you know, I guess be have a negative effect. I mean, I appreciate the position we've taken as a club, but at the same time, I mean, I bet Coach Fuller, you know, at the same time was like, hey, you know, I could have used some of those some of the players on those visas. So, you know, I can go either way on this.
Hey, well, the thing is, though, isn't it kind of exploitative though to have a person come in on a B2 visa because you cannot pay them?
Correct. And honestly, you can argue that you are paying them in kind, because these are things that I deal with visas at work too.
I mean, you can pay them in kind to give them room and board, but that still doesn't, no one can afford to live.
Well, and that's what I'm saying though, is that you could argue that saying that they really are paying them because they're paying them in kind income, you know, you could theoretically argue that side of the spectrum. But the thing is that you can't tell me that there isn't money getting paid under the table. And you can't, I will argue till the cows come home, that certain games would have had a different outcome if they didn't have stacked rosters with these international. Not to say that we don't have good domestic talent. Please don't take me as saying that. But when you have a lot of these international players coming in, they have grown into academy.
It is a very good point. Shelly, you make a great point, right? At this level, it only takes a couple of players, right, to make a huge difference on the field. So we're not talking about an entire roster of talented, but we're talking about one or two maybe special talented players. And I agree with you. Yes. Were they probably getting room, board, food, all these things? Yeah, but I agree with you. They were probably getting paid to make it worth their time here. I agree.
Exactly.
And that's what makes it unfair, because you want to try and do things the right way. You want to do it legally. And so then you're forced to have to be shady and do something illegal that'll come back and possibly bite the team and the league by getting around it because you want to make a better team. Like, that's the reason why we voted against it, because we don't want to have to be in that situation.
Yeah. And let's be realistic here too, that if something bad goes down and then there's a lawsuit against the league, the way the league is set up, that's a lawsuit for all. We already have enough drama within NISA. Do we really need another very legitimate government linked, you know, lawsuit that would go out there? And again, we have academies here. They are just not even compared to what you have in your international clubs, where these kids spend for, you know, working at a pro level from such a young age on up. It's just the developmental academies are way more advanced than what we have here. And the thing too is, I honestly think it's a very, just because I deal with looking at people's visas and things like that with work, it's very, very a fine line you have to walk, because if it's found out that they were getting paid even under the table, you could end up screwing up that player's chance to do a lot of things, future career. And granted, devil's advocate,
it's fair.
The players are taking it on, knowing that if I go down that road and something is, and if I do take money, even though I know I'm not supposed to.
Well, you want to do, they know.
Exactly. And that's the thing is, I hope that they have legal team either of their own or somewhere explaining these things to them, because if they didn't know when that happened, they're not too happy with you whenever you get visas looked at and things like that, and they find out you're getting paid when you shouldn't have gotten paid. And again, I'm not trying to insinuate that did happen, but just living off
better
of
call
room and
George
board, yeah. Yeah, so that's my thing, is that I would hate to think of clubs but I wouldn't want to ruin some. I mean, granted, devil's advocate, these players are also, if they're taking money knowingly, they're also playing devil's advocate themselves, hoping it's a Russian roulette at that point. You're hoping that nothing happens, but I don't know.
But I really wonder, like, why I read the protagonist article in the comments, but I really wonder why, like, other teams of, I guess, other fans aren't just like taking a big pee all over this. I mean, we all understand, like, it's wrong, and that's what, but I expected a lot more outrage. Yeah, maybe they just looking about, you know what, this is NISA and this is what they do. I don't know, maybe it's just expected.
Well, honestly, I think a lot of who you would think would comment, fan base of the team that won the league that was doing this, so that, why would they say anything? You know, they won, you know, I don't know.
Yikes.
Well, I am,
yeah. There aren't any other supporters really to comment. I mean, the other clubs, don't have a lot of supporters, and the other lower league fans are probably not at all surprised that this is going on in NISA. And so, I think it's been picked up by protagonists, which, you know, I love the work that they do. And this is a good story, and it's an important story, but, you know, not a lot of people, it's not going to gain traction until somebody, you know, if the Atlantic wrote a story on this, the Athletic, if the Atlantic wrote it, it'd be very interesting. But if the, if the Athletic,
I'm waiting for it to appear in Teen Vogue
this week in Cosmo. Right.
Yeah. So, but if the Athletic wrote it, I think you'd be seeing a lot more reaction. I've known about it for a while. I've had suspicions for even longer. Really, I had suspicions from the very start of NISA, because I knew that the league was not going to be getting P1 visas, and I knew that there were international players on teams. I just assumed that I was missing something, but there was another way that this was happening. until somebody told me,
marriages.
Yes.
Marriages?
True. Yeah. Which
that's
is,
the other way this is happening.
Right. You get married. Exactly.
And the thing is, and people don't realize, visas, like especially P1 visas, they're very expensive between legal fees and what you're having to pay. Mm-hmm. It's not some cheap little thing that you can just walk down to the courthouse, get a budget lawyer and sign for it. When you're getting something like a P1, they have very strict rules for a reason, because they have to, because otherwise then they just give them out like they were Halloween candy. So, I mean, that's why, and not all teams in the league have that financial backing to keep trying every year, every year, every year to try to get it. Because if they did, they're going to run out of money. Because how many times are you going to apply and get denied? And I don't know. It's something I've wondered since this article came out is, like you're saying, if it was in a different, I don't know, publication, maybe there would be some more traction about it. My thought I've been having this whole time is, you know, I hate to keep talking about our lovely New Amsterdam. They don't really have anything to lose at this point. Has anyone thought about the possibility that they might start doing some really shady digging up of stuff to try to just tank do something to tank the league? Has anyone else
I think he's already tried that.
Well, I mean, he's tried that, but the thing is that we don't know the reach of what these people's networks are and what they could try to, I mean, all it takes is one call to someone to have an investigation started, you know? And so that's what I've worried about too, is that, no, it's not like it's in, you know, the Post that put this out, you know, it's not like CNN is talking about it. Like, let's talk about NISA and these P1 visas, but that's not to say that something weird couldn't happen. And what would happen if that did, you know, I mean, we know that we're fine because but the way that the league is set up, lawsuit that could have ramifications for us, even though we're following everything that we should.
See a missed chance here is all I see. I just see a missed opportunity to both stack the league with international players as well as make some money. And NISA should have joined up with a TV show to do like Married at First Sight. And
there you go.
We could link up international players. Yes, and they could have sold. I mean, this was
opportunity. For the P1
I'm sorry, I didn't think of it early.
You are.
Thank you.
God, that was brilliant. You are brilliant.
I'm the big idea guy. I can't help
make this happen. They all come in on regular B2 tourist visas. It costs us nothing. And for, you know, 10 grand an episode, we'll make a TV show.
Well, no, we can do our own version of Love is Blind.
There you go.
Okay.
Married at First Sight.
I've lost complete control over what's
married
happening.
Todd is going to start attending open tryouts in a trench coat with pictures of women inside. Here, pick a wife. I got a wife. Pick one.
No, I've got it even better. I've got one up.
Very nice.
We're going to call it Marriage at First Match. And so at halftime, all of the eligible women or men, we're not going to discriminate, men or women eligible, we're going to match you up at first match. The first player that you see that needs this visa. We've got it. We've got the rule. We've got the solution.
We have devolved. We have devolved.
Yeah. This is not on the agenda.
I say we've evolved. I don't know.
I say we send an email to Jeremy, be like, hey, we've got this perfect idea.
Yes.
Just hear us out.
I'm already texting
Jim's idea.
It's all Jim. He's going to give Manganatas.
No, it is not me. I've got nothing to do with that. We have nothing to do with that. Absolutely nothing.
But yes, absolutely to actually nothing. Circle it back, though, to the reality is, we'll argue till I'm blue in the face that had this not happened or some of these teams aren't doing that, we could have had a very, like a drastically different outcome to last season. Just saying.
Maybe. Yeah.
You could argue. Maybe not. You could argue that it's possible.
Yes. I mean, but for me, that is, I mean, that's secondary to the, I mean, that's last year. That was water under the bridge. What ticks me off is that, you know, what I understood was that NISA had agreed that we weren't doing this again. And now they're coming back and doing it again. And,
Well, you know, it's like as the wind blows, I mean, really, I don't think there's any fluid, solid anything at this point anymore. I'm losing my faith that they're
it once again under NISA being NISA.
Yeah, 100%. Like they're just throwing darts or they're, you know, flipping coins. Like I just don't get it.
hopefully,
I think it goes back to, like you said, like a lot of these teams got nothing to lose.
Yes. Hopefully, yeah, hopefully nobody from the State Department is listening to the podcast.
Honestly, I do worry about some of these players, and the player that they interviewed from Detroit, you know, made a good point as well, is that, you know, okay, yeah, you're getting paid room and board. So, I mean, that's a big expense anyway. But, you know, obviously, even with NISA, or not NISA, even when with MPSL, it's like whenever you play collegiate sports, like when I played rugby in college, I had insurance through my parents, but we had to pay a fee, every player, and you were covered under insurance for like when things happen during games and practices. That's part of just the fees that you pay to be in a league. So obviously they're protected to some extent, but think about it. Imagine you're one of these players and you come over here, and he did say that he had injuries. He didn't get to play as much as he anticipated he would. This is their livelihood. Like, they could be, you know, if they get one bad injury, that's something they're going to have to deal with forever, especially if it's like a career ending type thing. And to think that you went out and you weren't even getting paid while you were doing it, which granted, you signed the contract doing it. That's a big, big, especially young players. Because if you think about it, we've had young players whenever we were in MPSL. So that's a ginormous gamble, knowing that you could have a career ending injury and you weren't even getting paid while it happened. Which, I mean, you could argue that that could happen if they were playing collegiately too. I mean, don't get me wrong, but still.
What if I said that under old management, I can see us doing something like this, but I think giving our current GM, I don't think this would ever happen because of the level at the sport in which he's worked. I think he has kept us out of these murky waters, whereas someone in the past may not have done that.
Because if you screw up in this, because the thing is, not that there hasn't been a lot of screw ups in NISA so far, but if you really screw the pooch, it could be detrimental to even being able to join other leagues or doing things elsewhere. So kind of I think we're playing it smart. And I think it's because we've got a manager who knows the ramifications and the implications of what could happen if something went south really, really fast. So yeah, that's smart. And you know what? I respect the fact that we are, you know, have the ethical background to say that we're going to stick by our word, and this is what we said, and we're going to stick with it. Like, I like that integrity that we have, you know. Does it mean that we have odds stacked against us? Yes, we do. However, I'll take integrity over that any day, personally.
Yeah, we've said from the beginning, this club, we believe in doing things the right way.
Yep. So I'll take that. I mean, again, I've said it before, I'm used to having teams that don't always perform how I want to. So it's consistent with every sports team that I follow. So I'll be here till I'm blue in the face. But if it means that at the end of the day, we did it the right way, then keep doing what we're doing. Because at least we know that it protects us in the long run.
All right. Well, I think that's all we really have to talk about tonight. Hopefully we'll see what this next week of, as the NISA turns, will bring us. We'll be 1 week closer to the season. And so I don't know. Does anyone have any last or final thoughts that you want to talk about? Todd, anything from up in Bradley County?
Elon hasn't come for you yet.
No, there may be something. No, Elon Musk has not saved me, but it's supposed to happen next month. Either that or I'll get my annual email saying it's next year. So we'll see what happens. But there is some word of a potential academy contract player lurking around somewhere in this region. So you never know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Jeremy mentioned that at the Chattahooligan event last night, that there may be one more academy contract coming. So that'd be cool.
I like the sound of that. Yeah. Because academy contract.
Yep.
It's good to see Shelly, local talent on the field.
Shelly, anything else?
Mm-mm, no.
Shabby, no. Anything?
No, just want to make sure we don't get in trouble with immigration.
Yeah, no. Trust me. Yeah, that's honestly, that's a worry. Not for us, because we're good, but
if you're,
it's a worry.
If you want to keep track of the MLS Next Pro League, you know, that, you know, just for... shits and giggles, you know, maybe keep track of what's going on there. I don't know. What a dark timeline we live in.
I did see an interesting ad to one of the rosters, and it kind of gave me an idea of how MLS2 rosters might be using that. I noticed that the Colorado Rapids signed Dylan Cerna. Dylan Cerna is 27 years old. He went to Akron, actually was a really solid player for a few years for Colorado. So they signed him to their MLS2, which I thought was interesting given his age. Mm-hmm. At 27 mm-hmm. years old. So
yeah,
I don't know if that's going to be a hint of the kind of players they'll be sprinkling them experience. Yeah, that was a tough one. Okay. Experience and then mix in some youth with that. But I thought that was interesting. I just saw it.
Oh, well, did you see who Atlanta signed today, by the way? Makes me happy. Dwyer got signed by Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
I followed him for years. So I know you don't care about Atlanta, but Dom Dwyer, that's who they signed.
I don't care about Dom Dwyer.
I mean, the amount of guy liner the guy uses is embarrassing.
He wants his eyes to pop on the pitch. Come on now.
Oh, God, yeah.
He's a poor man's. He's a poor man's Martinez. Okay.
Listen. We are not bringing MLS content.
All right, fine.
That is not.
Well, you know what we are going to bring to this content? The next guidelines for our Married at First match.
No, so that is super. We are not bringing any more of that nonsense either.
I'm just saying, you would have a lot of women and men lined up for that opportunity.
Okay. All right. Well, let's end right here before we start going down another rabbit hole. Todd, where can folks find you on the internet?
On the internet, they can find me on Facebook, just like everybody else that's over 40 years old, but mostly on Twitter at Great Footballer.
Shelly, where can they find you?
Well, they can find me on Facebook as well, but I'm on Twitter at ShellyAirs82 or on Instagram at ShellyBell9.
Shabby?
At OnlyFans? No, just kidding. At Twitter, you'll find me at Shabby Bell, ShabyBelle.
Okay.
Oh, you want to know what my old...
No, stop. Oh, geez. Okay. And this is Jim. You can find me on Twitter at Chattagooner. It's been a pleasure speaking with these three people tonight about things. So let's leave it at that. So we'll see y'all next week. Go CFZ.
Oh, it's not an error, but a cheeky goal.